Hello, folks. Welcome to the inaugural episode of Recovery in the Middle Ages, a podcast about addiction, recovery, everything else in between. I am Mike.
And I'm Nat.
We're just a couple suburban dads, stumbled into each other's stories, more on that in a couple few, and decided maybe some of our experiences in recovery writ large might be useful to you in your own journey.
Yeah, we're hoping to help anyone out there with our own experiences. I don't fancy myself an expert and certainly not a doctor or a therapist.
Oh, God, no.
No, but, you know, we definitely think that we've had some valuable experiences and, you know, lucky to be alive and happy to share, you know, how I'm currently coping with it.
Yeah, sharing our experiences. Also, I kind of wanted to also kind of take a dive into the recovery movement as it exists today. There's lots of new theories of treatment out there that are sort of going beyond 12-step. There's new ideas, different approaches, that sort of thing.
Yeah, there's not, the way I see it anyway, is there isn't just one way to the top of the mountain. One of the things I found out the hard way, I'd say, over the years is that, you know, if one program isn't working for you, if one treatment hasn't been successful, if you've been kicked out of a rehabilitation center six times, maybe you need to look at the treatment.
Is there a story there somewhere?
There might be a couple. I am not bitter. Moving on.
So in case you just dropped into this podcast based on our stellar logo, I just wanted to say at the outset that for you history buffs, I'm sorry to say Recovery in the Middle Ages is not about the history of recovery in the Middle Ages. It's a play on words because we are regrettably middle-aged.
Yes.
We're recovering or recovered, depending on what program you're doing, and that's going to be the focus of the podcast. If you're looking for a history podcast, I would suggest Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Yes, we regret to tell you that. And actually, Mike is slightly more middle-aged than I am. Well, and happily, the less middle-aged of the two.
Yes, it's nice that you have longer to live.
It's true.
Appreciate the reminder. Yeah, I mean, between the two of us, I think we have Gen X and Y covered, although I don't know if you identify as a Y. My wife is 10 years younger than me.
Is she
just
a Y?
Just a little bragging, and she considers herself sort of the tail end of the X.
Yeah, well, so I think people who are Generation Y, like I guess myself, like to think of ourselves as Gen X. I'm not sure. It has a little more cachet. I feel like when Gen X was a cool thing, and then Gen Y is sort of an afterthought that nobody's really interested in. So I'd like to associate myself with Gen X. I was born in 1978
on
a cold day in August, and I am happily 42 years old. I just
recent
had a birthday.
Birthday.
That's
happy,
right.
Happy birthday to you.
Absolutely. And we're happy to come together and tackle this. I'd say it's an interesting place in our lives where we find ourselves married with children, living in a sort of, one would think this is like an idyllic appearing situation. We've got wives, we've got children, I have a house.
Many wives.
How many wives? I mean, it depends. But I've only had one. I'm on my first wife currently. Yeah. But that's not true for all of us. And it's, you know, not a bit like we have a lot of experience to draw from. And this is where we were hoping that we could, relate to some people out there. I don't think we're the only two guys our age and our situations that have come from an addiction background and have been fortunate enough, I'd like to say, to have survived it and to be feeling like we are, thriving might be a bit much, but I'm certainly doing a hell of a lot better than I was even 3 years ago.
Yeah, we're doing okay, all things considered. And I don't know who else in town is. you walk by people and you wonder.
Yeah,
which is interesting because it kind of gets into, you know, how you and I cross paths.
It's interesting,
which
absolutely.
Which is an interesting story. Well, I don't know. What do you, I mean,
do you want to go? Well, I mean, it's kind of hilarious.
I mean, the way the first time we met in person, it was because our wives set us up on a blind date.
Right.
We were to go to a Yes concert.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is great because when you have small children and you're in a small town and all the friends you used to hang out with are either dead in jail or don't want to talk to you, you've got to make friends with
got to expand that social circle. Yeah,
it's your kids' friends' parents, right? So we've got a very limited pool in that. And so Mike's wife is cool, and my wife thought she was cool, and she's like, hey, Aaron's husband is cool. He's got tickets to a Yes concert, which of course is amazing, and do you want to go? Because she didn't, and I said, you know, what have I got to lose? I met the guy a handful of times. Seems like a cool guy. Of course, everything was surface as far as conversations. And we had a hell of a time.
I remember it was interesting because Aaron was like, you have to pick Nat up. And I'm like, why do I have to pick Nat up? Like, Nat doesn't have a car? And
why
I was like, whatever.
Nat have a car?
So, you know, it didn't occur to me there might be a reason you weren't driving at the time.
But, why can't Nat, at 41 years old, drive himself to a Yes concert at the local college? And
which was literally like a 15-minute drive away.
And yeah, you know. And thank God he didn't ask me directly, because I was hoping to sneak a beer at the concert. I mean, this wasn't like a real concert. It was at like a college. It was weird.
Well, you know, the average age of the Yes fan tacks to the older side. Not as quite as old as Steely Dan fans.
60s and 70s, yeah, and God bless them. And so it was, you know, and that's one of those things that I was coping with as a guy who I had I got a DWI, I believe it was 2015. And this is part of my story. We weren't going to go crazy talking about it, but I had, I had a DWI and I was put on probation to the local police, and I, of course, being an addict, you know, they put you on probation because you were drinking and driving, but they're punishing you for being an addict. In other words, the terms of your probation for me was impossible to stick to, because I'm like, what, are you kidding me? Like, for one thing, I need to smoke crack at the very least. And you mean I can't have a drink when I can't get crack? I'm like, it doesn't make sense. There's no way.
How dare they?
There's no way I could have done
absurdities,
it.
Absurdities.
You know, and honestly, the way I lost my license, because they give you your license for a little bit. You have to have like one of those blowers in your car, and they let you drive. But honestly, and this is a true story, I was court mandated to be at an outpatient program. I was leaving my current job, and I was late to get to my outpatient program. And I looked down to take a call from the outpatient program that was asking me where I was. And as I answered the call, completely sober, I rear-ended and totaled my car. So you ask, why did I lose my license? Because the woman saw me on the cell phone and it was a moving violation. Long story short, 3 years, no license.
That blows, man. That's just, that's some particularly bad luck.
It's just, you know, this is my luck in addiction. Just like everything that, you know, sometimes I got away with some things and I got lucky, and I guess that's, you know, sort of the things I have to focus on, you know.
Well, you know, I somehow, over a illustrious history of decades of drinking, have managed to elude the DWI, I think mostly because most of that time I was living in the city.
Oh.
And it's much easier to be a functional or semi-functional alcoholic in the city because you take the train. You know, you may fall asleep and wind up in Coney Island, but, you know.
Because here we're driving everywhere. There's
But I mean, the only thing the cops will do there is poke you with a club and say, hey, you know.
Wake up.
Is this your stop? They're not going to, like, haul you in. They got better things to do. So
that's why you had to pick me up at the Yes concert. But
It was good. I mean, I didn't know anything about you. You know, we're sitting there and having a couple beers. And
right. Of course I was having a beer. Even though it was illegal.
Nine beers.
It was illegal for me to be drinking. Just to point that out, I was on probation and completely illegal for me to be imbibing. But I was like, this guy doesn't know me. I'm at a Yes concert. I'm getting a beer. He's not going to judge me, right?
No judgment whatsoever.
So I did. Yeah. Didn't get drunk. Had a few beers. But I had no inkling that Mike had any kind of problem, because he's a guy who's like, now that's a guy that has his shit together. He's got it made. Look at him. He looks put together. The guy's, he's a lawyer. His kids are cool. His wife is cool. Maybe someday I could measure up to that kind of man, you know? That's what I was looking at.
Wow.
So and a Cub Scout good, huh? dad, too.
I clean up good for a date.
And yeah. he could start a fire in the woods. you know, with two sticks.
Stories about that, some too. Flint. Yeah, well, you know, I was, what's the term? Functional, you know, I hate the term alcoholic. Yeah. I'm not even going to use
functional.
It.
Functional.
I was high functioning.
High functioning in general.
Yeah.
High functioning while drinking.
Yeah.
Sort of an alcoholic.
So, I don't know. Should we talk more about background and history right now? Where are we coming from?
Right.
Or are we going to talk about where we're going?
And I think we both sort of agreed that, you know, we will get into it when necessary. I think we really want to tackle some of the big issues that are facing addicts in recovery, recovered people who are trying to stay or get sober or clean, depending on what you're looking at.
Right.
And so I think it would be great to kind of get into what's going on right now in recovery, because things are changing.
What is going on in recovery?
I think things are really changing. You know, when I first got into recovery, you know, the only thing I had any idea about was 12-step groups.
Well, that's pretty much what's out there, or what was out there.
That's it. And not only that, they have the monopoly on every outpatient, inpatient, you know, facility is all 12-step based. So that was my early experience. And I'm not going to say that it wasn't good. I mean, I have lots of respect for 12 steps. I got a lot out of it, but I think what Mike will, you know, attest to is I think that the both of us had to look outside of the 12-step program to really get, you know, what we felt like was better.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get sober with a 12-step program. I mean, well, it's probably more accurate to say I didn't get sober by using a 12-step program. I mean, the last three decades, I went to plenty of AA meetings. Worked the steps, never really stuck for me. I used to worry about it. I used to kind of obsess about it. Like I thought I was failing the program.
It only works if you work
rather
it.
Than the
it only works if you're worth it.
I mean, you know, why was I finding people in AA? And I have some friends in AA who have 20, 30 years of sobriety. Most I could manage was like 90 days. And then the 91st day I'd, you know, go out and do some field research in bars and wineries. And,
yeah, well,
and that would be interrupted by another stretch of sobriety, repeat ad infinitum. But I don't know. I don't think there's any right way to stop drinking. I think 12-step programs, life-saving for some. For other people, they're ineffective. And some people, they're just dangerous. I'm not running down AA, man. If that's your jam, then good for you, go for it, do it.
Agreed. And I spent a lot of time in AA, NA, believe it or not, HACA. I've listened to lots and lots of speakers from those groups, attended many meetings. And I feel like it's sort of like if I'm talking to somebody who their answer is AA or NA, like I said to Mike when we were speaking about this earlier, I'm not going to sit here and tell them there's no Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. It's working for them, you know, God willing, Allah Akbar, you know, inshallah, let's, you know, do it. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, you know, but the hard part was when it wasn't working for me, I had to not allow them to tell me, you know, there was something wrong with what I was doing. I had to be confident enough, which was extremely difficult because I continued to fail. But like now, I'm confident enough to have a conversation with some of my old friends in those groups. And when they're like, you haven't been to a meeting, and I can say to them, I'm good. You know, the things that I'm doing, the program that I'm working, such as it is, has worked for me. I don't, you know, suffer from a malady of mind, body, and spirit any longer. Mm-hmm. I would say, just like the big book says, we are recovered.
Right.
I know that's a lightning rod word in the interestingly recovered, not recovering. That distinction is definitely a hot spot.
Yes, it is. But it's in the big book.
It is. And I think 13 times or 17. I forget where, how many times, but he says it.
You brought up a point about confidence and not having confidence to sort of question the program. And I think that's very interesting because people, when they first get into or they first show up at an AA meeting, they have no confidence. They have no self-esteem. Absolutely. None of that stuff, you know?
Absolutely. So you're destroyed.
You know, And some people, you know, resist, but some people go in there and they just open up and they're like, you know what? Pour it in me, man.
Give it to me. I'll do whatever you say.
Right.
And sometimes those people, they do great.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. And they're not thinking about, why did you ask me not to have a relationship for a year? Why should I do that? They just do it. And that was my problem. I always was thinking too much. You know, I wouldn't call myself an intellectual, but I certainly try to be. And when I get presented with things like a program, I can't help but think about it. And not for nothing, but I think that made it difficult for me to recover in general, because the way you get clean, and I've been told this by multiple year AA guys, is get stupid. They would tell me literally, get stupid, and that's how you can get sober long term. Stop asking questions, take our suggestions. And it just did not work for me. And then a lot of guys will say, didn't work for you. Did you work the 12 steps? They'll always ask that. Did you keep going to meetings? Did you work the 12 steps? Did you have a sponsor? And the answer for me was yes. Did I work them perfectly? No. Did I go to a meeting every day? Not necessarily, but I was pretty consistent. And after all of that, still, I was unable to remain sober. Why is that? If the program is so perfect, if it is the way, the truth, and the life, why didn't it fix me?
Well, the implication is that there was something wrong with you, not right. That there was something wrong with the program.
That's a great point, Mike.
And what's their, you look in the big book and right there it says, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves.
Constitutionally,
I mean, what the fuck is that?
Incapable.
I don't know. What finally worked for me was intellectualizing the whole thing.
Maybe.
You know, putting science into it, looking at the nature of alcohol and the place alcohol occupies in our society.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a strange thing when you have an addictive chemical. And, you know, physical addiction, of course, only one element of, right, of alcohol addiction. Let's just pick alcohol and use alcohol. But, psychologically addictive as well. But rather than focusing on the fact that the substance is so dangerous and addictive, we focus on the fact that the person who's using it is somehow morally compromised or something. Right. And to me, that never made sense. I mean, look, I'm not motherfucking Teresa, but I'm not like, I didn't like the idea of reinforcing the fact that I was a piece of shit, which seems
you're not a Satan spawn.
Yeah, it seems to be a big part of the program. But, maybe I'm misinterpreting it. If alcoholism is really a disease, then what does being honest with myself, talking to God, and admitting my flaws to another human being have to do with stopping drinking? But, I mean, the disease model in and of itself is kind of...
It's interesting because the disease model, we talk about it like it's a philosophy, it's a theory, it's something out there, it's nothing settled. But I was always told, and the outpatients, and I've been to, let's say, 5 outpatient treatment centers in 4 years. I've gone through 2 inpatient 28-day programs over the years.
Wow.
And so I'd sat through a lot of these 12-step indoctrination situations, and it's given me a chance to think a lot about, like, what is this? Like, what are we trying to do here? And I really believe they mean well.
Absolutely.
And like you said, lots of people get better. But when you have someone like me or someone like you or anyone else out there, I mean, literally 5% is the published number,
right,
for success in 12 steps. So what does that mean? 5 out of 100?
Slightly better than random.
Right. I'm awful at math, but that much I can say. It's, you know, if it works for those five people, oh, God bless it. Don't mm-hmm. give it up. Don't throw it out. But when the rest of us are like, I still want to drink. I still want to use. There's nothing wrong with us. You know, I didn't get, I'd say, past my initial cravings, you know, that initial stage in addiction where you've tried to stop and it's day one and you still really want it. You're mm-hmm. thinking about it. So what got me past that was medically, it's called MAT, MAT. I think anybody listening to this will have heard that. That's another one of these lightning rod terms. Medically assisted treatment, it can mean anything from methadone, which is another one, to buprenorphine. But what I found was, you know, even though I was a drug addict and I did a lot of drugs, I was heroin, it was crack. Those are my big fancy ones that I loved. And really, though, I didn't do any of that until I had a drink in me. So my doctor and I said, we got to stop this drinking, this craving. And listen, we're not here to like push medications and that sort of thing. I'm not a doctor.
But I like what you said there, yeah. Your doctor and you.
Yes.
So, and, you know, that it's. There, maybe there are some doctors in AA meetings, but it's but they're not telling you, you
know, and they're anonymous.
What to do. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. Sorry for interrupting. Go.
Yeah. Well, just like what I was saying is it took me a psychiatrist at my last outpatient treatment center that I was at to say, hey, you've never tried, you know, this drug to, you know, to help your cravings. And I said, no, I've never even heard of that. And, you know, and I basically, like what Mike was saying, I was willing to do what my doctor told me to do to try it. And lucky for me, we found a combination that worked. And, you know,
Which drug was that?
It was, are we allowed to, like, say names of drugs? Do you think that's going to be like... I know. Are we going to get sued? I don't know. I have a lawyer on staff.
Or better still, get advertising.
Yes. So, you know, with the fear of being possibly, you know, sued, you know, I was on something called Campril, which is the generic name is Acamprosate. And also one of the better known drugs for that sort of thing. It's called naltrexone.
Yeah, that I've heard of.
Right, so that's like the Vivitrol shot, but mm-hmm. I had it. So I was taking those in combination. And
the Vivitrol is like a monthly?
Vivitrol, if you get a shot of Vivitrol, which I also have had that over the years. That's another thing that I've been experimented upon me. Yeah, you get a shot in the butt, and it works for about 3 weeks.
Does it have to be in the butt?
That's pretty much the only place they wanted to put it, but I've known a lot of guys like that. you know.
Wait, I have a badumpsh.
Do you have?
Wrong one. Never mind.
Hey, guys, we're still working out the kinks on this soundboard, you know, but this is the morning zoo.
Shit. Sorry. Sorry, everybody.
Yes.
Never mind.
All right, we'll get it. We'll get it. We're working on it. You know, everybody. This is episode one.
New equipment, new toys,
new
fun
equipment,
stuff.
And
anyway, we were talking about you getting it in the butt, and then we kind of lost our track.
So, you know, getting it in the butt, and I couldn't do opiates, and I didn't want to drink, and so finally, after long story short. 6 months goes by, I didn't have a drink, I didn't have a drug, and then I was able to come off of those drugs, you know, safely, and now I've got a couple years, I feel good, you know, I don't wake up every day either A, wanting to kill myself, or B, looking for the next, you know, shot of whiskey, or, you know, call the crack guy, mm-hmm. and that's a miracle to me.
Well, right, I mean, I haven't really gone too much into my own past. I mean, you know, now I have three kids and I live in the suburbs, but you should have seen me in the 80s. Or as I refer to them as the crack years.
Yeah, you saw New Jack City,
it's
right?
Like the Wonder Years, but with crack. It's just new. But similarly, like it would never occur to me to put a rock crack into a stem and smoke it had I not had a couple of drinks. Like I wouldn't. I'm not the kind of guy that just sits around in the afternoon and be like, you know, like, what would make the day better?
You know, what some would crack. Be great? You know what would make this episode of Quantum Leap better?
Right,
crack.
Yeah. So you know, for me. Well, I don't know. I stopped doing cocaine and cocaine derivatives long before I stopped drinking.
Like last week, right?
I have a little more, time than that. cocaine, probably about 20 years.
Oh, my goodness. Give or take, I'm sure the cocaine you had 20 years ago compared to what I had 3 years ago is completely different.
No, man. Let me tell you. There was a big gap because I really stopped using crack in like 91. And wow. I had a long stretch of not using anything. And then when I went to law school, there was a bar in Brooklyn called Cokie's, which is <it's> ironic.
Is it really
because,
called Cokie's?
Yeah, it's in the Williamsburg neighborhood where the DJ booth, you could go slip the guy a 20 and he'd throw you a little packet of something. I don't know what it was. I think it was coke mixed with some kind of weird crank or something. But I was not getting... I was not getting anything approaching decent cocaine in the late 90s, early aughts. Eventually, that place got closed down. But
that's a shame. That's a real shame.
No, it's actually great. I mean, the thing that really severed the, they say, you shouldn't really be pulling geographics, like picking up and moving to,
right.
To another, because you'll just find trouble wherever you go.
That's program lingo. I'm going to call you out on that, Mike. Program lingo.
I am not going to throw the entire thing in the trash can. There's a lot of good stuff in that program.
Yeah.
And the idea with the geographic is, okay, you take, wherever you go, there you are, basically. Right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, but in my case, I was living in the Bronx where I could go down to the street corner and buy crack, after a couple of drinks at the bar. Moving out of the Bronx to, a more, well, I moved out of the area for a while, kind of did a reset, got healthy, all that kind of stuff. But I just couldn't get drugs anywhere. And
that's a big one.
Yeah.
Not being able to get it. For me, like if I didn't have guys ready to deliver it, I probably wouldn't do it. I'd come up with something eventually.
But the thing is, if you're in that situation and you put enough distance between the time when you were last using and you sort of break the psychological bond between having a drink and needing to smoke crack every time you have a drink,
right.
Then you can sort of, at least for me, I was able to break that bond and then just continue on with my alcoholic drinking without adding the cocaine, because cocaine is just it's an extra layer of trouble. I've known plenty of high functioning alcoholics. I don't know too many high functioning crack addicts.
Don't know a lot of them. Yeah. Nobody like smokes crack like a gentleman.
It's a very selfish activity.
It's very selfish. Curled up in a fetal position on your mother in law's bathroom floor. Thing or mother. I wouldn't go to my mother-in-law's unless I was robbing her for stuff at the pawn shop. But I digress.
Yeah. I don't know. How did we get into that?
Yeah.
You were talking about medication and
medication.
Right. Because
did you ever try medication?
I did not. Oh. I really wish. That it had been around back then, because I think it would.
Something? I know a guy, Dr. Silverstein.
Now it would be kind of lost on
he's
me.
He's a real mensch. He can get you anything you want.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, talk to me after the podcast.
That's okay. We'll do that.
But it hasn't been around that long. And I guess that's something interesting.
Yeah, and that's another point. And look, Mike and I are not here to talk, crap about 12 steps, right?
No.
I think a lot of, what we want to get out there is like, listen, if you fail at 12 step, but you're trying, like we were trying, like I was trying, there's more opportunities out there for you to be successful, and do not give up. You know, especially, you know, with this alt recovery. This is another thing. I don't know if people listening to this podcast have heard of the alt recovery movement. I mentioned this to an AA buddy of mine, and he very much like scoffed. Oh, alt recovery. What does that even mean, man? And like, okay.
What does that even mean,
man? What does it even mean, man? Like, that's not God. That's not Bill W. You know, what are you talking about? That's not recovery at all. And that's a response I get sometimes. Like, it's not recovery, man, if it's not, you know, X, Y, and Z. But there are other ways out there. I can't sit here and like list everything, but that's one of the things we want to get into with this podcast.
Right.
Refuge recovery is one.
Yes.
You know, I'm getting a lot out of one of the things that kept me sober is I listen to, you know, and like, I'm like a 10-year-old. I can't read a book. I want a book read to me. So Audible is wonderful. It's like the mommy I never had reading me addiction memoirs, you know, and but I will listen to that. And there's great addiction books. Addiction podcast. One of the things that inspired, I think, us to do this is that we listen to a bunch of different ones that, you know, the Share podcast is great. You know, the Dobie podcast is fantastic. And, you know, I get a lot out of that. You know, not everybody does. And I get that. But I think that fills the void in me for like going to meetings and listening to somebody talk. But it doesn't fill me sitting here talking to Mike or calling up a friend. So you have to make up for the fact that you're not, you know, going to these meetings and schmoozing around. But by the way, doesn't happen anymore because of the coronavirus. So that's another, mm-hmm. I mean, that's actually, Mike, that's a great segue, actually, I think. We don't have to take the segue if you don't want, but we can
to
get,
what?
This is the off ramp here. We can get off, we can go to, staying sober during the pandemic. That's what I have in our notes.
Well, I saw a great meme on the other the other day. It's been going around. It's a photograph of a giant concert hall with like 20,000 people in it, and the title is AA meetings in 2021. Because I think people have been having a hard time with the pandemic.
Yeah. I mean,
but before we go,
yes,
before we leave the last topic alternative resources.
Yes. Yes.
I just wanted to just, you know, what is it? Finish the circle.
Yes.
Not the I.
Complete the circle.
The T. What? Complete the circle.
Not the I. You know, buckle your belt.
Because the way that I found out that you were, you know, involved in the recovery thing at all is I listened to a podcast and called Recovery Elevator, which is great. If you don't know about it, you should check it out.
Yeah.
And they have a Facebook page, and I was on their Facebook page kind of poking around. And you know how it always has that little thing like, which one of your friends also likes the page? And I saw
Nat. It outed me,
said,
right?
Well,
there.
That's interesting. So I sent him a little Facebook message, and then we, you know, that sort of broke the dam, and we started talking about after that.
And that's horrifying. I mean, that's horrifying if you're in one of those towns, right, where your kids are going to school, and this is your son's friend's dad. This is the guy who you absolutely would never want you to know what you really are, right? And that's my biggest fear, honestly, is that Mike would ever find out that I was a drug addict. And here we are having this conversation on tape. I know it's not actual tape, on digital. And it's just, it's kind of crazy. Actually, this whole thing is insane.
From that first conversation to now has only been like a month. So we moved fast.
I think I was starved for companionship, frankly. You know, I don't get out much, but you know, nobody really does.
Well, true. And you know, and that's the other reason those resources are so effective or good for so many people, because there are so many different levels of social anxiety that people have.
And
there are people who go into meetings and, you know, they can tell a ripping yarn, you know, and it's very entertaining, and you know, they're getting an ego blast out of that, and you know, that's fine. There's a space for that. But then there's other people that, you know, that would never want to talk in a crowd of more than like four people.
And, right.
You know, the retort to that as well, there's meetings for everybody. You just need to find the one
that
you like.
Right. Small meetings, big meetings.
Right. Yeah. But you know, I mean, some people, it's hard for them just to get out of the house and interact with other people.
Right.
You know, there's lots of introverts out there, and you know, in a program that requires that you stand up and talk about yourself can be like just terrifying for people. So,
right. I mean, and that's what's great about this pandemic. And I never thought I would say that. Like, what's great about this pandemic is absolutely nothing. It's crippled my business. It's made my kids crazy. Right. It makes me want to kill my wife. I mean, we already wanted to kill each other, but this has just accelerated, you know, the murderous, you know, feelings between us two.
she going to listen to this? Or,
no, she will. Well, right. No, because she's never interested in anything I do creatively. And I'm satisfied that she'll never listen to this because it's something I'm interested in, so I can just like count on that.
I'm going to mark that for editing that section right there.
Oh my goodness. But this pandemic. So back to what is this pandemic good for? One of the things is more and more people have to go to these Zoom meetings. It's not all Zoom, but it's the virtual meeting. So I feel like there's a lot of people out there who were, and I kind of hate this term, but it's out there, sober curious.
Right.
Because I'm sober curious. And lots of people are finally getting out there, I feel like, because they can go to a Zoom meeting and turn off their camera and just listen. So I think if anything good is coming out of this, I think it's maybe more people are coming out. But like the converse of that is the most horrific thing coming out of this is people who have been sober for 20 years,
right,
who 100% depend on going to three meetings a week, that they're making a coffee, you know, they're mm-hmm. greeting at the door. And when that has vanished, I mean, just look at the paper the other day. We have on Long Island a 60% increase in OD deaths.
Yeah, that's really tragic.
I think that was the July numbers compared to last year. So, you know, it's come at a price, like a lot of what's happened. But listen, you know, we should go for what's happening and what's working now. And I think that's one of the good things.
Well, that's a good point as well. That it's a reason why recovery programs that depend on regular attendance at meetings, you know, may not be the best way to go, because, you know, what happens when the meetings disappear? Then what?
Right. And nobody has imagined that could happen.
Right. You know, you can pick up the phone, you can always call somebody. But you know, the opposite of addiction is connection, right?
Yeah, I love that.
Like that too. And I don't know if that's an AA thing. I don't ever really remember hearing
that. From what I understand,
AA,
it's that TED Talk guy. I can't remember his name. He's really brilliant. And his TED Talk, like that was his whole shtick, where he was British, and I can't do a British accent. The opposite of addiction is connection. And he said it in
that's
like...
pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's very good, right? And it was just brilliant, though. I mean, I think a lot of people haven't even thought of it. He's not even an addict, by the way.
Really?
He is, what do they call him, like a para-addict. He knows addicts. What do you call people who are just like...
He's an addict once removed.
Hanging around addicts, you know. What do you call that, like brother-in-law or something? So that's interesting. Yeah, look that up. Yeah,
the guy that started, I guess, what was it, Cinecor, which was the original heroin... rehab out in California,
right
in Santa Monica, was not a heroin addict. He was a
Dr. Silkworth. Should we talk about? Can we mention Dr. Silkworth? Is that like talking about Muhammad? Can we say mention Dr. Silkworth?
Sure, why not?
Do you know who he is?
No.
Oh, come on, Mark.
We can talk about Dr. Silkworth.
Okay, guys. Let me just sit down on my knee, and we will do a little story, an AA story. So, at the beginning of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's something called the doctor's opinion. And, and his name was Dr. Silkworth.
I gotcha. Okay.
So he is the doctor who, you know, him and Bill W., and he really gave Alcoholics Anonymous a lot of his time, and they took a lot of what he had helped thousands and thousands of alcoholics at his hospital. Mm. And you know, he gave his endorsement, and this was a big deal.
Right.
And in the first edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, he was anonymous because he's like, I don't know what this is going to do for my career. You know, I don't want to have my name attached to these drunks.
Right.
You know, but it was so successful, you know, and everybody go out and read it. You know, it's worth a read. I got a lot out of it. The doctor's opinion, in any case, and that is Dr. Silkworth. Mm. I don't even remember where I was going with that.
I don't know. I must have had a early version of the Big Book.
Yeah, you had the first edition.
Right.
You know, in Sanskrit.
One other interesting resource that I stumbled upon, you know, when I was getting sober, was Reddit. There's a subreddit. Those of you who don't know what Reddit is, just do type reddit.com.
So what is Reddit?
Go find actually? It. It's a social community on the internet.
Oh, it's like MySpace.
It's been around for a while.
Is it like MySpace?
They call it the front page of the internet. Yes. I don't know. But it's, you know, if there are Gen X people listening to this, many of them may not know what the hell Reddit is.
I don't know what Reddit is.
Anyway, there's a subreddit, which is, I don't know, that's a little beyond my... Somebody being murdered in the alley back there?
You heard that, right?
Yeah, I did.
Sorry, guys. We're actually at my shop. I own a shop.
It's a safe neighborhood, really. And, it's just a little...
We just heard somebody screaming outside.
Anyway, the subreddit is called the Stop Drinking subreddit. Ah. And it is a... Well, Reddit's more or less an anonymous place anyway, but people just get on there, and it's a very supportive community of people that support one another who are trying to stop drinking. Mm. And that was immense help to me. It sort of took the place of meetings, if you will.
Yeah, you didn't have meetings? Like, what did you do? Just like,
well,
talk to your wife or something? I mean, what did you do?
It's funny. My drinking history is not really that linear. I mean, I had my ups, I had my downs, I had my periods of sobriety, and then I had periods of basically simple, high functioning, you know, 2 to 3 drinks a night for years, you know, interspaced by weekends of carousing and whatnot. So,
yeah, I mean, I just like to point out that the only people who, you know, refer to themselves as high functioning are alcoholics. You know?
Yeah.
Just by the way, because our spouses would never
right.
consider us high functioning in those circumstances.
I don't like the term alcoholic. I prefer the DSM's alcohol use disorder.
Yes, alcohol use disorder abuse disorder.
Using the word alcoholic seems to say to me that it's normal to consume an addictive substance.
It's a loaded term.
And not become addicted to it, right? And abnormal not to.
Right. So did you have sober friends? I mean, you didn't even have me back then. How did you
did I have get, sober friends?
How did you get by without me? That's what I want to know.
I have no idea.
How did it go? How could you possibly?
All these years.
It's amazing. Mike and I are like, we're like recovery soulmates. We've, you know, come together here.
That's
sweet.
And
this is an opportunity for us to, you know, maybe fill in that void. You know, I've got a void, you know, I've got a mic. A recovery podcast sized hole in my soul. And this is going to fill it right here.
Wow. That's, you know, don't put too high expectations on me.
We're going to have some editing to do. Just FYI,
you know what?
Mike's on that.
I hate editing. I let it all in. Just throw it all
out. Just let it all go. We're going to put our last names on here. That's another thing I would just, you know, we're going to stay anonymous, I think. It's worth mentioning, probably this should have been at the beginning of the show, but, you know, we talked about it, and I think we can both appreciate how anonymity is going to allow us to sort of tell our stories, you know, as truthfully as possible. And because, frankly... My story, I don't even know Mike's story, really, but mine is a horror show. It's not only a horror show, it's an embarrassing horror show that under any other circumstance, I would never in a million years tell to one of my son's friend's father, least of all this guy. So we are going to definitely lay it all out there, but no last names, please.
No, it's going to be good. I mean, you know, Maybe we should do like a whole episode on anonymity, just the concept. And
anonymity. And if you've ever been to a meeting, it's the one word that nobody can pronounce when they're reading the preamble. UAA people get a laugh out of that one. Anonymity. Anonymity. But yeah, that's one of the traditions in AA.
It just goes to show how society is really not ready to sort of confront the, I'm searching for the analogy. I can't find it. The thing that's in the middle of the thing.
It's the elephant in the room.
Thank you.
Is Bigfoot.
The elephant in the room, which is there are an awful lot of people out there that struggle with this sort of stuff.
They sure do.
And a lot of people who are suffering and struggling and don't see a way out. They don't see that they can walk into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. You know, and they don't know what else is out there. Thank God for the internet. You can find stuff now.
Yeah.
You
know? I mean, but really, 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 you know, we are in a much better age for this sort of thing. Just kind of following up on the anonymous. I'm also a big consumer of addiction related films, documentaries. Mostly I like nonfiction. And one of my favorites is a documentary called Anonymous People, which is actually about that exact topic. I don't know if you've seen that.
I have not.
It's the whole shtick. It's about a quote-unquote movement of people in long-term recovery. This is how they're identifying themselves, right? So it's really a lot of people from AA, NA, and everything A. And they're getting together to sort of lobby the government as a group. And kind of the point of this documentary is to mobilize people who otherwise would be anonymous. And so what does that mean? That means we have no advocates in local government, in, you know, federal government.
Right.
So they are organizing. I think they do a big march every year, but they're coming out and saying, hi, my name is, you know, Joe Schmo. I'm in long-term recovery. Mm. And then they advocate towards, for addicts, you know, for services, for, you know, laws to pass that help addicts.
Wow. Where can somebody find that? Is it on Netflix?
So where I get it, and it's because, you know, I'm an impulse shopper. I'm sure there's free ways to get these, but I just like, and listen, I don't have a lot of money, but, you know, it's because I spend, you know, impulsively on Amazon. So, like, you know, anytime I see something.
Impulse control. Who would have thought that would be an element of addiction, right?
This is an indicator. I have no control. But if you go to Amazon or Amazon Prime, Anonymous People, I think you can buy it. Probably rent it. They usually do like a $3.99 rent, $9.99 buy. I always buy because I'm a schmuck. And my wife's always like, what are all these $9.99 charges on the card? And I'm like, nothing.
Research.
No, it's research.
We'll throw up a link in the show notes.
Yes. In the show. Say. Are we doing show notes?
We got to.
That's what they always
it's
say.
It's a show.
Yeah, it's a show. And they always say that in podcasts that I listen to. I'm also an avid podcast listener. And so, you know, a lot of what I'm doing today is just sort of modeled after podcasts. Podcasts I've listened to, so I don't even know if it's going to be what we should be doing, but definitely there's show notes. Mm-hmm. My question is, who is the one that makes the show notes? Is that me? Or if you're going to edit, am I going to do show notes?
Yeah, you could do show notes.
Because I feel like, you know, you're getting kind of a lot of the heavy work here. You know, you have to haul all your stuff to my shop. You know, you're going to do the editing, and then I'm just going to sit here and be a diva, and like I'm the talent, right?
All right,
I'm just going to come in.
You know how to put these bits and bytes together so they become something on the internet. That is a skill that I lack.
Marketing. Yes. You're getting to marketing. All right. I'll handle that. I'll put it out there.
I mean, in terms of what we want this show to be,
I think
we're a little inchoate about that.
Ooh,
at this
that's a good
time.
Word.
Sorry. That's, I hate that.
Would you like to define
screw that
word?
Yeah. We're a little up in the air about it. So I'm thinking, you know, some interviews maybe, if we can get anybody to talk to us in this back storeroom that we're in.
Yeah.
Some reviews of movies and recovery-related books.
I think that would be really cool. I think, you know, I'm not going to say read because that would be insincere. I listen to a lot of recovery books and watch a lot of movies. And I think there's a lot of great points, a lot of great things that come to light that we can talk about. And I think that would be interesting. The bottom line is, you know, we want to be helpful and entertaining if possible for someone who's interested in this stuff. You know, and it could be people who have loved ones that are addicts.
Right.
Or you could be just getting your, you know, doctorate in addiction and you just want some research and we're the guys you're going to come to.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be
come
really
for the
cool.
addiction, stay for the recovery.
Right. Right. Absolutely. You know, that's good shtick. And of course,
I try.
Of course, you know, we're happy to, you know, shoot us an email. I'm not going to give you an email right now because we haven't set one up. But
we'll put it in the show notes.
Put it in the show notes. And hopefully we'll have a good Facebook group, a discussion group where everybody can sort of get together and be kind and supportive. And I'm really hoping to do something like that to build a little bit of a community
right.
of support.
Build the connection.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're at 50 minutes right now. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
I'm very impressed. I have to say.
That was painless.
I think it was painless. Yeah. And
almost enjoyable.
I don't know. Should we finish on, guys? Thanks for sticking with us for this long.
Lord's Prayer? No, just kidding.
We have a great way of ending this meeting. So.
Do we have a catchphrase?
We have a catchphrase.
I just didn't write it down. Sorry.
Yeah. So we were talking about this, our first show. We got to have an ending tagline. Like you have to say something.
Yes.
So part of our logo, which maybe you have seen, maybe you haven't, it's got some Latin. Let's see if I can read it. So the Latin little phrase is non proficit perfectum. Or as we say in America, progress.
Progress, not perfection.
Boom.
Right.
So that's it.
That accent was really, it was like Transylvanian almost.
Did you like that? Dracula.
Good for Halloween.
So thanks, guys, for listening.
All right, thanks. We'll be back next week. Hopefully a weekly thing.
Stay in touch.
All right. Be good.